My name's Granville Williams, and I edit a magazine called Media North, and it deals with issues to do with the media, both local, regional, national, international. And my background is, really, that I've been involved very actively with media reform over the years through the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, and edited Free Press for a number of years. And before that, I've worked as a journalist, mainly covering industry, trade unions, industrial relations. I suppose I was part of the dying breed of the industrial correspondents. But that was a long, long time ago.
We still use this term Fleet Street, don't we? But Fleet Street isn't really where it's at nowadays, is it?
Absolutely not. I mean, there's the actual explosion of communication means that the number of online activities, the ways in which people receive and access their information. Indeed, there's a report that came out from Ofcom just last week, I think it was, which documented the fact that most people get their news not from a newspaper, but online, from different networks and operations that exist online.
There's also, I mean, I've noticed over the last probably 6 months or so, on the Press Gazette, which used to be a nice little newspaper for journalists, now it's just online. Yeah. That there are two major problems. One is the survey of media ownership says it's getting ever more concentrated, and the other is just basic trust in the press. People in Britain are trusting what they read in our newspapers, see on our TV screens less and less.
Yes, and the reasons for that, there are a number of reasons, but it does seem to me that, first of all, we have a highly partisan, politicised press, so there's a block of newspapers. If I just take the example of the Daily Telegraph, when I pick up a copy of the Daily Telegraph, I'm amazed that it actually claims it is a newspaper, because essentially what it's publishing is propaganda, disinformation, very politicised, and clearly, in terms of its readership, that seems to me a problem. If they think that is journalism, then that also applies to a block of other right-wing newspapers like the Mail, Express, which sometimes carries incredible, delusional front pages, and the Sun, the Murdoch newspaper. So trust in newspapers, I think, has plummeted. Not all. Trust in broadcasting, public service broadcasting, there's still an element of that. There's a much bigger trust in that area. And of course, there are different levels in terms of print media of what people actually trust, what they will read. For example, I more and more just rely on reading the Financial Times to get information, because it might be a paper for big business, but it is accurate in what it does, especially on things to do with the media.
Oh, well, look, us journalists, I think, notice these things more than your average reader, viewer, punter, or whatever. Yeah. What is it you would say? I mean, you singled out the Telegraph there. Can you give us an example of something, you know, you've read recently or seen there that you think, well, this isn't really news at all?
Well, you only have to consider the ways in which it covered the general election. And if you were to read it, you had, for example, both a very soft treatment of reform and also clearly a support for the then the Sunak government. And it just seemed to caricature the other parties, including Labour and the Lib Dems. It's so selective, so narrow in its view of the world, and it's, of course, its journalism is now deeply problematic in the sense that a number of journalists have gone. For example, most famously, Peter Oborne used to work for the Telegraph, and he resigned in disgust because they quite cynically decided that they were going to have a deal with a bank which effectively meant that you couldn't write critically about the bank because there was a commercial interest.
Can we name the bank?
I think it was Santander.
Right. Yeah.
That's a recollection.
Okay. Well, we can check that one out.
Yeah.
You were talking about this free press. I know I used to subscribe to that. You know, what happened there? And is there anywhere where would you recommend people get information about the press? I think there's a lot of people out there now who are getting a lot of their information on social media, but they're very more conscious, particularly the youngsters, about how the information, who owns the information, I suppose, the transmitters, the printing presses, the social media platforms.
Yeah. Well, Free Press, sadly, the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, closed down in October 2018, and I edited the final issue of Free Press, and it was a very sad moment. But I decided that because we in the north of England we kept a lot of activity, done a lot of activity, and I was able to set up Media North, and so we run it's a quarterly magazine. And at the same time, we organise meetings, publish books and pamphlets and so on. So we keep something of the old campaign and its issues, concerns about media ownership, press regulation, censorship. Indeed, I've just written something on the broadcasting ban. Do you remember that? Which the Tory government imposed in 1988, September, I think it was. Or October 1988, to just simply prevent Republican voices and IRA having been interviewed.
Well, that's right. I remember vividly Chris Morris sending it up by breathing in helium and speaking out as if he was saying for the IRA. The idea really being to, I suppose, to discredit the Republican, but Sinn Féin and the IRA.
But in the end, of course, it was an inept and foolish move. Which meant that the Gerry Adams, for example, could point to the way that the British government censored them when he was speaking outside of the UK. Mm. So that's one example. We were very active in the campaign for press and broadcasting freedom, campaigning against the ban. So that's what we did. And I still those issues we still tried to focus on. In the media now.
Good, right. Well, also we've seen this week, haven't we, the Israeli Defence Forces moving in to the West Bank and actually shutting down Al Jazeera. Now, this is the sort of thing I would imagine that if the Free Press was still going, and in Media North, this is the sort of thing that, I mean, journalists around the world are very concerned when they see things like this. You know, I don't think it's quite happened here in the UK so much as where we've had Special Branch moving in to the BBC, for example, haven't we?
Go back to the Secret Society programmes that they stopped being shown on the BBC. But it has happened here, but not to that extent, where you just simply close down the whole operation. That was a very partial, limited foray against the BBC. They argued it breached security, which was nonsense.
So what do you make of this shutdown of Al Jazeera there?
Well, the 2 points. First of all, Al Jazeera operated in Israel, and you have to make a distinction between Israel and the West Bank, obviously, because that's Palestinian territory and under Palestinian rule. Ramallah, there should be no intrusion by anybody from either the Israeli government or the defense force, but they just ignore that now. They've already killed hundreds of people, Palestinians, in the West Bank. But it fits in exactly with what they did previously in May when they closed down Al Jazeera's operations in Israel. And it's to silence them. Because what the Israeli Defense Force and the Knesset argue is that Al Jazeera is a terrorist. I mean, this is crazy, but this is what they say it's a terrorist organisation, it supports Hamas, and therefore it should be shut down. Now, Al Jazeera is like the equivalent of the BBC. It seeks to tell the story. And the problem for the Israelis is that when you report from Gaza, you cannot avoid documenting all of the absolute carnage and destruction that's taken place there. What was an integrated civilization, economy, society has been devastated, so that now we have this awful situation where people have to be vaccinated against polio, something that's unheard of in most societies now. And so that's what it's about. Israeli government, especially now, it's moved into the extending its carnage and bombardment into the Lebanon. It wants to silence critical voices, both in closing them down and also, let's remember, two Al Jazeera journalists were assassinated in Gaza when they were reporting, and that they were clearly wearing press vests. Their car was clearly marked, but it didn't matter. Their car was targeted and they were killed. So it's both physically trying to prevent them from doing the job, and also in some cases murdering journalists as they do their job.
Well,
very simple.
Yeah, the figures are around about 170 media workers, I think, now have been killed. I mean, some people will say... What's your opinion? Some people are saying that actually this is specific, deliberate, and the idea is to simply stop the world seeing what's going on in Gaza.
Well, that's absolutely the case. For example, Western journalists out are not allowed into Gaza. They're only allowed if the Israeli Defense Force lets them. So that a whole array of journalists who would want to report inside Gaza can't do it. And those who are in there, most of those who are reporting inside Gaza are Palestinian, or they are people from other countries, Arab countries, where they can speak and do the go around interview and also report. And they are the ones who have been targeted. It's a brutal death toll, and we cannot accept any explanation that there was accidental deaths. These are targeted ways to silence people and to prevent them reporting from inside Gaza. And I think the closure of Al Jazeera's office in the West Bank is part of doing that, as they move into extending their military operation into Lebanon.
I also worry because, I mean, we've got a correspondent we speak to every few weeks in Gaza, Wafa Aludaini, and I find myself actually wondering maybe the best thing to do is not to ask her to do a report, because it could end up with her being killed. Even though we've got a little small podcast here in Bristol, the Israelis seem to be targeting anybody that's getting independent news out. I mean, this is a horrible thing for any journalist to be thinking, I don't want to hear from this person in case they get killed as a result of reporting for us.
It's a real problem. And you're right, of course, that the ability of the Israelis, as we've seen in this incredible situation where you had the pagers being detonated. The Israelis have, over the years, built up a very, very powerful intelligence, security and surveillance system. And we're seeing it in operation. And that means that they can check and find out where people are and just simply target them for assassination. And they always claim that they are trying only to take out one person, when you find that sometimes 10, 15, 20 people are killed as well, and buildings just destroyed. So it's a very cruel, destructive operation that we're witnessing. And that's why the importance of organisations like Al Jazeera being able to be to record it, it has been so central to the work report that's been done. And I'm afraid now that it will become more difficult as a result of the two actions that Israel took in May and now in late September to close their operations down.
Well, one of the big players in the coverage in the West of this conflict and the genocide in Gaza is the Murdoch Empire. I understand there's a little bit of wrangling going on at the moment about who's going to, almost like a kind of battle for the succession of the throne of the media mogul Rupert Murdoch.
Well, this is a story that's been played out as we speak in courts in San Marino in the United States. There was an agreement, a trust agreement, so that when Murdoch dies, and remember he's 93, but I'm amazed that he's still absolutely in control of the operations, even though he said he stood down. But the key was there was a trust set up. And Murdoch's got six children, but four of them are in this trust. The two children that Murdoch had with Wendy Deng, they will receive money when he dies, but they won't be part of the actual decision making. And what Murdoch wanted to do, he's called it ironically Project Harmony, is he wants to write out Elizabeth Murdoch, James Murdoch, and Prudence McLeod, his eldest daughter, because they're not on board politically. Only Lachlan holds on to the absolutely horrible right-wing toxic projects that Rupert Murdoch has set up, like Fox News. And Fox News, of course, epitomises this, what we've talked about earlier, trust and distrust in the media. Fox News is absolutely anti-journalism. It's a form of propaganda, which for many years shamelessly boosted Donald Trump. And people like James Murdoch became really, really uncomfortable and have moved away, broken indeed. He's signed a letter along with a few, 20 or 30 other big business leaders in the state supporting Kamala Harris. So the battle is on. Murdoch wants to cut out any influence from James, Elizabeth and Prudence and hand on the mantle of this right-wing, nasty, poisonous project to Lachlan Murdoch, who I understand is even more right-wing, if it's possible, than his father.
We haven't heard much reporting of it, though. Why is that?
Well, you can't. It's totally under wraps. I mean, interesting enough, back in July, the New York Times got a copy of the sealed affidavit that what Murdoch wants to do is to sort of cut out the other parts of the family and leave Lachlan in sole charge. So it's all taken part and been discussed under wraps. There was an attempt to try and make it an open trial in court, and that was knocked on the head. So it's all speculative, but what I think is happening is that James Murdoch is the one who's the most intransigent against any sort of attempt to hand on the poisoned legacy to Lachlan Murdoch. He's the most adamant. People aren't so sure about Prudence and Elizabeth, and I understand there's been a lot of back-channel pressure discussion with them to try and get them to move away from supporting James. Now, that's just speculation. Mm. That's just reading between the lines, because, as you said, it's not being reported. You get speculative stories about what's going on, that Prudence might be trying to mediate between them, and then another one might have a story saying that Elizabeth Murdoch might be trying to mediate between them. But we don't know. This information isn't coming out. Everybody's keeping stum about it.
It's a wonderful irony. Isn't it a wonderful irony that we've got the future of one of the biggest feudal media empires in the world is kept so secret and out of the press by lawyers, an army of lawyers, I imagine. Anyway, look, Granville, I wonder if there anywhere if you would recommend for people to follow what you're up to with Media North, etc. Whereabouts can people find you?
Well, it's online. If you go to www.medianorth.org.uk. You can read all the back issues of Media North and all the other stuff that we've done, meetings that we've done, etc. We did, I was very proud of it, we did six issues of Election Watch during the 2019 election. We were planning to do it again this time, and then they jumped the gun and had the July election. We thought, assumed it would be in the autumn. So we didn't manage to do it this time. So that's where you go to, Media North, and if people want, if they like what they read, they can sign up for it. They just send their email in, and we guarantee you two things. One, the only thing you'll get from us is Media North quarterly. We won't bombard you, and if you don't like it, you can unsubscribe immediately.
Okay, Granville Williams, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.